Welcome to the Shir and Targum in Parshas Yisrael. The Shir this evening is sponsored by Ira Miller, marking the yard side of Rochelle Miller, Rachel Goldabas, David Halevi. It's also sponsored by Simchan Aviva Romostein, marking the yard side of Simcha's grandfather, Yehuda ben Isser. Shalom should have an aliyah, should see Moshe Nachas Ruach, and the Torah Mitzvahs and Maisim Tovim that the families are involved in. Beginning of Parshas Yisrael, appropriately enough, talks about Yisrael and his visit to the Jewish people. And if we take a look at the Targumim, the Targum Yonason in particular references an idea that we're familiar with, but works it into the Psukim in a somewhat unusual way. So Perek Yudches Pasuk Zayin, we're told that when Yisrael comes to Moshe, Vayetzei Moshe Likras Chosno, Moshe went out to greet his father-in-law, Vayishtachu, Vayishaklo. He bowed before him, he kissed him, Vayishalu, Ish L'Reyehu L'Shalom. And each person asked his fellow, they inquired as to their welfare. So, on that half of a pasuk, Yonasan ben Uziel writes, Unefak Moshe mituchos anona yikara. It says, Vayetze Moshe, he went out. Where do you go out from? So he went out from underneath the protective cover of the Anon HaKavod, of the clouds of glory. They were surrounding the Jewish people. And apparently, for Yisro couldn't... I mean, how do you enter the Jewish camp if the Jewish camp is surrounded by clouds of glory? You know, I don't know if there was a push-button lock or anything like that, or, you know, a secret knock. You know, who is it? Apparently, in order to even greet Yisro, that's the implication of the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, Moshe Rabbeinu had to leave the Anon HaKavod. He had to leave that protective, enveloping environment of the clouds of glory. So that's why Vayetze Moshe. He went out. So he went out to greet his father-in-law. Uskeid Unesheikle. So he bowed down and he kissed him. Vigayre. And Moshe Rabbeinu was Megayer. He converted his father-in-law, Yisrael. Now that's not in the Pasuk, right? The Pasuk says he bowed down, he kissed him. Doesn't say anything in the Pasuk about how he converted him. So where exactly did the Yonasan ben Uziel get this idea from that it's at this point in time that the gear, that the conversion of Yisrael took place? So some of the Mefarshim on the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel understand that this is hinted at in the phrase Vayishalu Ish L'Reyehu L'Shalom. Each one asked his fellow, inquired about his fellow's welfare. The term Re'ehu, his fellow, implies that there's some kind of shared value system that Moshe and Yisro have with one another. They're not just two individuals, they're fellows, you know, they might be described as comrades. You know, they're comrades in arms, so to speak. So how did they become Ish L'Reyehu? How did they become Reyim? How did they become fellows or comrades of one another? The use of that term at this particular juncture indicates that this is where the gear, this is where the conversion of Yisro takes place. Again, we know that Yisro certainly had inclinations towards embracing the God of the Jewish people. You know, Chazal talk about how Yisrael was Megayer. But you can't be Megayer yourself. You can't convert yourself. It's not a, there's no self-serve aisle, you know, when you come up, you know, in the avenue of conversion. You need somebody to do it for you. So Yisrael converts when he encounters Moshe Rabbeinu. That's how we understand, that's how the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel understands this first encounter. And then the end of the pasuk is also very interesting along these lines. Vayovahu ha'oela. And they came into the tent together. Now the simple pshat is, they came into the tent of Moshe Rabbeinu. He went out to greet his father-in-law. He invited him into the tent. Gave him a coffee. You know, maybe something harder. I don't know. You know, they sat down together. Writes the Yonasan ben Uziel, Va'asu l'mashkon beis ulfana. They came into the Beis Medrash, the house of learning, together. We know that the concept of the Ohel being a term, the tent, which is a term used for Beis Medrash, is something that's most famously found with regard to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Ishtom Yoshev Ohalim, when Yaakov is described as someone who dwells in tents, it means, say Chazal, that he was a dweller in the Beis HaMedrash. But here the Onos HaMenuziel understands that it's true over here as well. Moshe Rabbeinu goes out of the cloud to embrace Yisrael. He's Megayer him, he converts him. Apparently that's a prerequisite for being able to bring Yisrael back into the cloud. In other words, for him to come into the Machane Yisrael, into the Jewish camp, surrounded by the Anar Yaakovet, he has to first become part of the Jewish people. And right away, what do they do after the gear takes place? You know, they skip all the pleasantries, they don't sit down to coffee or anything like that. They sit down to a shir, you know, they sit down to learn together, they come into the Oel, into the Beis Medrash, and right away, after Yisro has experienced the formalities of coming into the Jewish people, the first thing he does is to sit and learn.
Here we're talking about a time when it was really great times for Klal Yisrael.
Right.
In the days of Shlomo, he would take any gera because he thought that they were coming in because of him. It was great times to come in and they are free to allow.
Right.
So how can we accept someone at this point in time when Jews were really spied on?
Right, it's an interesting question, right? So the halacha says, the Gemara says, that the Beis Din did not accept any converts in the days of David and Shlomo because the Jews were so prosperous on a material level. Things were so good for the Jews that there was always the thought that people were just coming and joining the Jewish people because it was the best of times. You know, so how can you reconcile that with Yisro and his joining the Jewish people at this point? So I can suggest a couple of things. Again, maybe any one of these is true, or maybe they're all true in combination. So first of all, this is pre-Matan Torah. So pre-Matan Torah, you know, I mean, again, most of the Mefarshim understand that Yisro comes pre-Matan Torah. Ibn Ezra disagrees, but most understand that he's coming pre-Matan Torah. And if that's the case, you know, the rules might be a little bit different. That's number one. Oh, right. So which... it really speaks to the same idea. You know, the notion of the conversion process before Matan Torah is probably somewhat different than the way it was post-Matan Torah. I mean, just on the most basic of levels, Moshe Rabbeinu goes out and is Megayer Yisro. Hey, wait a minute, I thought you needed a Beis Din. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu is, yeah, we understand, he's about as high as he could get, but a Beis Din is still three people. I mean, you know, with all of that. So, again, the rules might have been a little bit different, or maybe even a lot different before Matan Torah. That's number one. Number two, Yisro begins this quest before wonderful things happen to the Jewish people. Remember, Yisro is sticking up for the Jewish people back in Mitzrayim when it's unpopular to do so. You know, so certainly he has the street cred, you know, as they say. He wasn't just coming, you know, when times were good. Number three, as good as times were, they're still wandering around in a desert, you know. You know, maybe it's not quite the kingdom of David and Shlomo. And finally, number four, the halacha is that even during the times of David and Shlomo, it's not that there were no such thing as Gerim, right? The Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, officially didn't, you know, the official Sanhedrin, or the official Beis Din did not accept Gerim, but the Rambam makes it clear that, you know, ad hoc Batei Din did accept Gerim during the times of David and Shlomo. So in other words, it wasn't that it was prohibited to accept Gerim, it's that, you know, it was unofficial, you know, it was off the books, you know, so to speak. They didn't do it officially. All right, so, you know, once you have that flexibility, that it, you know, it's not totally prohibited, it's just that we didn't want to put a stamp of approval officially on it, you know, it might be easier to understand how Moshe Rabbeinu could embrace his father-in-law, who, again, as after all, had displayed such a love for Jews and for the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, before it was popular, you know, to do so. Yeah.
So there may be also mitigating factors. If you want to have a Zaydi in the Einiklip, you want the Zaydi to be Jewish, it would be right. Very, very convenient for different things, whether it's wine or bishul, just to respect and deal with them in a certain way. He's given up on everything else that is not
right.
Jewish.
Right.
Also, before Matan Torah, you could say that the Gerus was with someone who really wanted to become part of the Jewish people. Batya, Israel. She went down to the... Who was the guy to her? She
right.
Went down on her own. That's
right.
All the Gerus made before
right.
Matan Torah.
Right. So maybe a whole different story altogether.
Right.
Yeah.
The idea that you couldn't enter the Jewish camp.
Yeah.
Was, what about Moloch? How did they get in?
Right, so Chazal talk about how the stragglers of Dun were actually outside of the cloud. You know, in other words, that's how Amalek was able to attack. Not that he penetrated the Anon Yaakovot, but there were people who were outside of the Anon Yaakovot. They were stragglers, yeah. And they were the ones who were attacked by Amalek.
It was the Medrash that says that because when Balak came to curse the Jews, he went to the back. Why did he go to the back? Because the Jews in the back were not covered by the Anon Yaakovot.
Right, right. It's the stragglers. It's the Shepalton Ha'anon. Right, yeah.
I want you to suggest that maybe it wasn't that easy. Things weren't as good by himself as it was in the time of David and Shlomo, partially because they were still in the desert. Okay, they had that money coming, but they were far from the desert.
Right.
And there were so many people that, you know, they had down to Shlomo, Pinyas, and home to Shlomo, Shlomo. It was a very widespread thing that that they sometimes wanted to go back and they had kindness. So it wasn't like in the time of Dalton Shlomo, but the Betachin was on such a universally.
Right. You know, you could definitely distinguish. Right, right.
Before we come to Moab, how did the staff get into promotion that this was coming? This is the Shliach thing. How did he get in?
Right, I don't know. So maybe... You know, but that's actually the Targum Yonason, one of the commentators on Targum Yonason says that that's how we know that Moshe, that Yisro couldn't make it in. Why do you send the shliach? Let him just go. Anicho sencho Yisro boilecho. What, so you have to clean up, right? In other words, you have to pick the socks off the floor. You know, the shver is coming. You know, so he sent a messenger because he couldn't get in. So how did he get a messenger? So maybe there was a Jewish person who went out of the out of the cloud. You know, he went out for a minute. And Yisro said, "Oh, could you do me a favor? You know, just would you mind going in, sending a message that I'm here?" Yeah.
When did Tzipora come in here?
Oh, that's a good question, right? So Tzipora doesn't show up in the story till later.
Theoretically, they were married before Moshe.
Right. Now again, that was pre-Matan Torah, right. but he brings Tzipora over here. He brings Tzipora over here. Perhaps he was I guess he was Megayer her before, back in Midyan, in some way or another. Perhaps, I don't know. So, yeah.
Okay, Anani HaKavod.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the Klal Yisrael, the Am Yisrael, just have a lot of needs for their benefit. In Mitzrayim, but something about the clouds of glory, I don't understand what was their function. I it's not clear to me. In other words, I don't see. I mean, was it for all 40 years that the?
Yeah. It was the clouds of glory basically were bulletproof glass around the Jewish people throughout the time that they traveled through the desert.
Okay.
Tinted windows. Okay. You know, bulletproof, and it protected the Jewish people as they made their way.
So, were there some attacks against the Jews?
Yeah, absolutely. And had they not had the Anon Yaakovot, the implication is that they would have been able to penetrate, and the enemies would have been able to penetrate, and would have harmed the Jewish people. So, this was surrounding the Jewish people in a way that protected them in a very, very.
And according to what we just learned, or what you just gave over to us. It had a distinct border.
Right.
You leave, you go out, you come back in.
Right.
It's very distinct, but it's just hard for me to really grasp.
You were there, you don't remember.
Think of a force field.
Right.
I mean, not that I really know what a force field is, but I mean that's the image that we have basically, you know, like this misty force
in
field.
In the movies, matter of fact, you don't know what that is.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Movie is a five-letter word, please.
My memory a little bit.
You know, from circles, we don't talk about movies. We talk about videos. It was a video.
Another five-letter word.
There you go. So towards the at the very very end of the story of Yisro, this idea of gear comes up once again. Here, it's actually interesting. Rashi mentions it. The pasuk, the very end of Perek Yurches, pasuk Chav Zayin, Vayishalach Moshe Eschosno. Moshe sent away his father-in-law, Vayelech lo el Arzo, and he went back to his country. Why did he go back to his country? So Rashi writes over here, L'gayer b'nei mishpachto. He went back to convert the other members of his family to this newfound religion. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel actually takes this even further. Here's the Yonasan ben Uziel. Petar Moshe Yoschamui. Moshe sent his father-in-law away. Va'azolei legaira kol b'nei are. He went back to convert all of the people of his land, not just his family. He went back to convert that entire region in which he lived in.
Like the
Khazari. Yeah, something like that. So in other words, apparently once Yisrael himself has converted, again, you wonder, where's the Bezdin, right? You know, but apparently in this pre-Matan Torah world, so, you know, Moshe has the ability to convert Yisrael on his own, and Yisrael, now having converted on his own, now has the ability to pass that on, you know, so to speak, to convert his family, to convert the other inhabitants of Midian or his region of Midian, where he happens to be. Okay, I want to just take another beautiful Yonasan ben Uziel and speak about that a little bit. So we know, of course, that in Perek Yud Ches, Yisrael gives Moshe advice about how he should organize the Jewish people and the shailas and the questions that are being asked to Moshe Rabbeinu on a constant basis. You know, Yisrael is every father-in-law's favorite parsha. Right? The father-in-law comes in, he tells the son-in-law what he's supposed to be doing, and the son-in-law falls into line. You know, I mean, it's favorite parsha for fathers-in-law. So he tells him, Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Yud Tes, Ato Shma B'Koli I'atzcha. Now you should listen to my voice, says Yisrael to Moshe. I'm going to give you advice. V'hi Elokim Imach, and God will be with you. Heye Ato La'ah Mulho Elokim. You should be, for the people, opposite God. What does it mean that you should be opposite God? So here the Targum Unkelus writes, Heve at la'ama tova ulfon min kodom Hashem. You should go and ask God for instruction. Doesn't mean that you'll be opposite God in some kind of spatial way. It means that you should be the one who will go to the Ribbono Shel Olam and ask him for instruction. Have God teach you the Torah. Veivesa atos advarim el ho'elokim. And you'll bring all of these issues that come up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then once you do that, v'izharto eshem, then you, Moshe Rabbeinu, should instruct them or admonish them, meaning the Jewish people, as hachukim v'ashatoros, concerning the laws and the statutes, bodato lohem, and you should teach them, as haderech yelchuva, you should teach them the way in which they should walk, v'ashamaser sher ya'asun, and you should teach them the acts which they should perform. The simple pshat in this pasuk is that Yisrael is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, look, Moshe Rabbeinu, the way in which you can maximize your effectiveness for Klal Yisrael is not to paskin on every little thing that comes up before you, but rather you should be the conduit to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You should learn Torah from the Ribbono Shel Olam and teach the Jewish people Torah. That's what this last pasuk means. V'yisharto esem es hachukim v'yisatoros v'odato lohem es haderech yelchuva v'yisamaser sher ya'asun. That means it's a very poetic, very beautiful pasuk. But I think what we're going to see bothers the Yonasan ben Uziel, and we'll see that this is really a Gemara as well, Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Kuf, where the Gemara takes apart this pasuk and sees this pasuk as instructing Moshe Rabbeinu with regard to very, very specific items that he's supposed to teach to the Klal Yisrael. It's not just saying generically, you should teach Torah to the Jewish people. It's an overly wordy pasuk, if all it means to say is that you should teach Torah to the Jewish people. Rather, it's zeroing in on very, very specific things. Again, the language of the pasuk, teach them chukim, toros, haderech yelchuba, hamaser sher yaasun, four different phrases about what Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be teaching Klal Yisrael. So what are these things? So the Yonasan ben Uziel writes as follows. Fisazar yason, yes, koyomayov yes oraisa. Again, that's a literal translation. You should exhort the people to follow the rules and the statutes. Usahodo lahon, yas tslosa di itzalun bebe knishtahon. you should inform them of the tefillos, the prayers, that they will pray in their shuls. That's how the Targum Yonasan translates, Vodat Elohem, you should instruct them. Teach them about the davening that they should do in their shuls. It's very fascinating. I don't know. We usually assume that there were shuls, you know, in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. But again, whatever a shul meant at that time, there was a concept of davening. Again, we know the Anshe Knesset HaGadolah were the ones who instituted much of the formal davening that we have today. So again, the davening that's being discussed over here is probably somewhat different than what we did at Mincha, what we're planning on doing at Ma'ariv. But nonetheless, there is an idea of tefillah. I mean, we know that the Rambam famously holds that the essence of tefillah is a din d'oraisa, is a Torah obligation to daven every day. So the first thing that Yisrael tells Moshe Rabbeinu is that as the leader of the Jewish people, you have an obligation to instruct them how to daven and how to daven in shul. That's Jewish leadership starts off with teaching people how to daven and how they should daven specifically in shul. Now it's interesting to note, I mentioned before that a lot of the Yonasan ben Uziel that we're going to see really mirrors a Gemara in Bava Kama Daf Kuf Amud Aleph. There the Gemara does not interpret Vahodat Elohem as talking about tefillah. There the Gemara understands Vahodat Elohem is Talmud Torah, is learning. That's what it says in the Gemara. But it's interesting. The Yonasan ben Uziel says is talking about davening. That the first responsibility Moshe Rabbeinu is given by his father-in-law, teach the people how to daven. Okay. What else? Yeah.
Yisrael just came, and he came to speak to Moshe. Maybe by that special parsha that was named after him. That's one thing. He has some type of insight. But where did he get to be able to do all that? And he should teach all that to Moshe. Maybe he not. Moshe had the source already from much old.
Okay.
Talking to Hashem many times.
See, he was a smart man. I mean, that's what you see. He had a certain intelligence about how to go about doing things.
And
so
that solved the problem of Yisrael's sword that people threw out the Moshe.
No, so that this doesn't solve the problem. But in other words, certain things Moshe Rabbeinu should delegate, certain things Moshe Rabbeinu can't delegate. Fascinating, right? You can't delegate teaching the people how to daven. That you're gonna have to do yourself. Right? Fascinating. Let's see a little bit further. Yes, Orcha. The Yevakru Lemirian, you should teach them the manner in which they should be Mevakir Cholim. You should teach them how to do Biker Cholim. This is in the Gemara in Bava Kama. The Ahachun Lemikbar Misaya, you should teach them how to conduct funerals. You know, not like what book to use and what to read, what responsive reading to read when, right? But in other words, how to engage in kvura, how to bury people. Ulamigbo ba'chizda, and you should teach them how to do gemilas chasadim, how to do acts of kindness. Vias ovada de shuras dina, you should teach them the notion of following the law when it comes to interpersonal relations. V'diya abdun milagav l'shur salarishiyan. And you should teach them the concept of lifnei mishuras hadin, particularly even when dealing with rishaim, with evil people who maybe deserve X, you should cut even the rishaim some slack and, you know, go lifnei mishuras hadin, go beyond the letter of the law in how you deal even with wicked people. So again, much of this is the Gemara in Bava Kama, but some of it is not. The Gemara in Bava Kama talks about how you should go lifnei mishuras hadin. It leaves out the word for rishoyim, right? Now, there's a concept of going lifnei mishuras hadin in general. But here, the Yonasan ben Uziel says specifically, Moshe Rabbeinu was told by his father-in-law, go lifnei mishuras hadin for rishoyim. Extend, you know, go the extra mile for people who really don't deserve it. So it's fascinating. What are the things that can't be delegated? Moshe Rabbeinu has to teach the people how to daven, how to do bikur cholim, how to do kvura, and how to do gemilas chasadim. I would think all those things could be delegated. You need the Gadol Ador to teach you how to do Bikur Cholim. You need the Gadol Ador to teach you how to run a funeral, how to do Gemilas Chasadim. So apparently the answer is yes. In other words, there's certain things about these Chasadim that, you know, it's not so simple to just give over, okay, we'll have a committee and they'll teach the people how to do it. You need somebody of stature to really be at the forefront to teach the people how these things are supposed to be carried out.
there's so many different varieties of ways of doing something. If Moshe teaches it, he'll say he has the Mesorah for Moshe, so no one will question. It'll be a very high level,
right?
Because everyone else knows it'll be recalling this. So that's why Dafka Moshe, no one would ever question it.
Right.
It's
so what
Shnei Kishribin.
Right. So what you see is that you need people of stature to really instruct you on how to do these things. Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Rav Sa Kodesh Baruch Hu Lezakus Es Yisrael, Lefikach Hirbo Lohem Torah Umitzvos, Shenemar, Adonai Chodesh.